You got content, man. Yeah. And you got, and you've got,
I hope so.
My wife always says, my wife doesn't listen at all. She doesn't give a rat's
She doesn't
underwear.
Listen about to our show.
No, she's
My wife doesn't either.
So she doesn't listen.
She likes the idea of our show. She doesn't listen to it.
She says you like doing that. Have fun.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cinema Faith Podcast for May 2017. I'm your host, Jonathan Butrin, and I'm joined once again by the baby to my Groot, Tim Nelson.
Aww.
I don't even know what that
means. That's some cute imagery.
Tim, it's summer. We've made it. It doesn't feel like summer around here, though, I have to say. The Midwest has given us some crazy weather.
We have like a comment every podcast about the weather in the Midwest. We're like, why do we live here? Why do we live here? People are going to wonder, like, they're never going to come to the Milwaukee Film Festival here now.
That's true.
Fourth largest film festival in the United States. They should come to it.
They should come to it.
It's like a day before the Oscars.
Uh-huh. right, exactly. No great movies that you've heard of, but, you know, just come.
There's some good stuff.
Just come. It's okay.
It's true.
The thing about the weather that's been bugging me is that I have no idea what to wear in the morning. I like have no idea. Like, you start off the day. Yeah, okay, last Sunday, I put on a sweater thinking, you know, because it was freezing the day before.
Right,
Outside. It's hot. I'm like, made a huge mistake. By the afternoon, grateful for my sweater because it was cold and windy. I don't know what's going on with the weather.
So everyone that wanted to hear about a movie tonight.
I'm just saying.
We want to remind you, always dress in layers.
If you were in Wisconsin, yes. But regardless of how the weather's treating us, the point is that it's the summer movie season, officially. Kicked off at the beginning of May with the movie we're going to be talking about today, which is, of course, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. That's our movie for the day. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So let's talk about the summer movie season, Tim. What comes to your mind when you hear that term?
I think of like the original term blockbuster, where like basically the lines are going around the block. And I think of my parents talking about, oh, I remember when we went to Star Wars, and the first time we tried to go to Star Wars in 77, there were the line was so long we just didn't go. And then we came back for the next week or something. So I think of blockbusting, right?
Yes.
Not like the practice of discriminating against people, but I mean like blockbusters is like they basically got lines wrapped around.
Do you know what movie blockbuster was coined after?
Can I guess Jaws?
It was Jaws. Ding, ding, ding. You did
that's
it.
That's awesome.
Wow.
And what a summer movie Jaws is.
What a summer movie. It was. It was the first time people were wrapped around the block. It was called a blockbuster. And boy, did they think that movie was going to be terrible. Richard Dreyfuss, like the day before that opened, he was like ready to run away from Hollywood. He thought he was going to be a disaster. And then what do you know? There you go.
What do you know, man?
So anyway, I feel like there was a time when the summer movie season felt dumber than it was. Every time I think of the summer movie season, I think of that movie with Will Smith and Kevin Kline called Wild Wild West. Did you ever see that monstrosity?
Is it Jackie Chan in that?
I don't think Jackie Chan's in it.
He's in another one with Luke Wilson. That's the movie I'm thinking
of.
Shanghai
Nights? Yeah. That.
But it's a West theme,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
No, yeah, that's a really terrible movie.
It was.
Yeah.
It's set in the Old West, but they've got like futuristic technology and the villains running around on like a robot.
And
like,
everyone sees it, whether they like it or not, they're just going to go.
Well, this is my point, because I was trying to think what has made the summer movie season a little smarter than the past, and I was thinking it's because I think audiences have gotten more demanding, because with the advent of like Rotten Tomatoes and critics and stuff, right? Because back in the day, it was easy to bamboozle an audience, right? You just throw a great advertising campaign on the screen. You have a newspaper. That's pretty much the only way you know, right? And then you just have like a picture of the movie and a quote from some Joe Blow guy saying it's the best movie ever made. And it's like, all right, well,
in a world,
check it out. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So I feel like with the amount of research you can do, that the studios have had to say, well, we can't make garbage because we're going to lose a ton of money. So the bar's been raised.
As long
raised.
As Shia LaBeouf is here.
Shia
LaBeouf. As long as he's here, we can know that something's still wrong.
Hey, I like Shia LaBeouf. He's good.
Something is still wrong, John.
Okay. Well, he did make Transformers, and I can't forget him for that.
I like some of his stuff. I'm not totally just
Yeah, you just watched a Shia LaBeouf movie, American Honey, right? Which I still have to see.
Highly rated by, I think A.O. Scott was had a real high rating of that movie.
I am excited to watch that. So here we are, thick of the summer, and we are ready to get down and dirty with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So you've seen it, Tim. We've seen the movie. Not together this time, but you've seen it. I've seen it, and we're ready to talk.
Our children got in the way. Your children were fine.
That's okay.
Mine got in the way.
We had a grand plan. It didn't work out. We're family men. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
All right. Tim, I once heard you go on a rant. It's not surprising.
Just once?
About all the reasons you hated superhero movies. It was very sad to me. I do do you remember this? We were at a baseball game. We were coming out of the parking lot, and you went on an epic rant about the origin of superhero movies in Hollywood and why they're terrible. Do you still feel this way? Please.
You mean the adolescent
explain.
Power fantasy rant?
That's exactly right. Yeah, go ahead. Please.
So so the origin of the comic book superhero. So, I mean, like, we can't say, like, you know, all of, I mean, there's mythology, right? You get heroes in mythology. But the comic book superhero, the origin, like, being from the comic books, post-World War II, Jewish kids in New York writing these comic books, and the idea is, like, they're going to, like, create an Uberman for themselves to basically right all the evil that basically the world just encountered. And it might be for big evil, but it also might be like there's a bully at school and we're going to make a superhero to kick his butt, which is really cool, right? Uh-huh. So then you have all these comic books coming out and you get guys like Stan Lee. And I'm not a comic book guy, so I'm not going to claim to know the history of comics. And this, like.
And I'm not either. Let the record state, we are upfront. We are not comic book people, but we do, or at least I do, appreciate comic book movies. Continue.
I feel like at this point, we're like one step away from Kevin Smith's social circle. Because he's come down so far. And I feel like we could probably get it some, he may, like, you know, put a comment on our site, maybe, I don't know.
That would be epic.
It would be epic. And say, what's wrong with you guys?
I know.
But in any case.
And I'd say, why did you make Tusk? Because you've ruined my life.
There you go.
Never watch that movie. PSA.
So the idea is, like, their origins are with kids who have these fantasies of power. And because they don't really have any power. And so the way that they do justice is they create these more powerful things than whatever situation or other force they're encountering. And then they get, they're like revenge fantasies. It's like, how can we get revenge and how can we right the wrongs? Because in my real world, I don't see a way to right the wrongs. So we'll have these comic book heroes right the wrongs, which is cool. It's really cool. It's creative. We have, you know, half the movie industry now that has come out of that.
It's true. It almost isn't even, I mean, I wonder how much of it is actually comic book related and how much of it is just kind of built into the DNA of movies in general. I mean, if you think about it, is what makes Superman that much different from Chief Brody in Jaws or, you know, Han Solo or Indiana Jones? I mean, all the classic movies we love are really about superheroes, right? I mean, they may not have a cape, but...
But isn't Chief Brody going through, like, character development? See, this is the character development right. thing that I want to talk about.
But every good comic book movie has an origin story, right? And so, I mean, there's no difference, right? You start at the basic building blocks of a movie. You start off with an ordinary guy who somehow has to do something heroic, right? That's kind of like your staple movie. And I think that's the same way with comic book movies. They start off normal, they get powers, and then they have to do something. What's the difference?
So who starts out normal in the movie we're watching right now?
No but this
one!
Is a sequel to...
Okay, all right.
The first one, so now...
I get that with, like, Spider-Man,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Okay, I get that with, Superman even.
You know, you're
Batman,
right.
Batman's just rich. We've already covered that. He's just a rich guy. He's industrious and he's disciplined, but he's really just very rich. Some listeners are going to hate this. I know I can see Dan Baker just getting mad right now.
Oh, yeah. Just stop listening, Dan. It only gets worse.
Dan, it's me and my adolescent power fantasy over superhero movies. But yeah,
Iron Man, you know, normal guy, and then he has the suit when he's rich. Yeah. You're kind of right, though, about Guardians of the Galaxy is they all kind of start off in a fixed state. They don't really gain any powers. They kind of have them.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Or they're created into it, right?
Yeah.
Like the raccoon dude.
But still, I don't know. I feel like it almost comes, your explanation of superheroes almost comes across as a little demeaning. Like, I just... Yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's more to it than that. I feel like the reason why we love superhero movies so much is because of Jesus, man. Because Jesus is the ultimate story that all of these heroes point to, right? The hero's journey that's charted, that we learn in film school, like, I mean, it's the Jesus story. He even has death and resurrection built in as a step.
So the question is, and this is like, this will probably put me in controversy, is mm-hmm. Jesus one of those stories, or are all the stories pointing to Jesus? Are those, is that mythology exists pre-Jesus? And then he fits into that mythology.
You're saying Jesus was fitting into an established hero story?
Well, that's what a lot of people would say.
Wow.
Yeah. So then you got to deal with that. But I don't think you have to lose your faith.
Right.
So, but yeah, there's, now we're getting theological.
I love it. Okay. That's what we have
like
to do.
Even the flood narrative is not the first flood narrative on the scene. It's very similar to the Babylonian flood narrative that we have, right? But ours has certain distinctives that make it like life affirming, mm-hmm. that the gods aren't angry kind of stuff. And so what I would say is there's unique things about the Jesus story, but maybe it's that there's something about us that demands the hero narrative, right?
Mm.
And so maybe that is like something about how God has created us as human beings across cultures that want the hero narrative.
That's interesting. You know, have you heard of people say, you know, that the gospel was actually something that the Romans were already using those languages of like Son of God and gospel and stuff like that, and how the Christians actually took that and subverted it.
Right?
So what if the Jesus story took the existing hero's narrative and kind of turned it on its head a little bit?
Interesting. Yeah, look at political movements. Of course.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that happens all the time.
Yes.
So I think that's right.
So there's no studio on the planet that makes better superhero movies these days than Marvel Studios. I think that's unqualified. I don't think you can critique that statement. Marvel has perfected this thing to a science. It's a marvel. So Tim, Marvel, why do they consistently get this right? What do you think it is? Because DC's trying, other people have tried. What is Marvel doing?
I don't watch superhero movies. All right. So you're asking the wrong guy. I don't know. I mean, tell me what you think. What do you see them doing right? Because I didn't know this. I don't know this. I know that they're making big money.
Here's what I see. I remember back in the day, before Marvel Studios was born, there were kind of one-off superhero movies, right? I remember Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, there's X-Men, you know, even Blade and stuff. There were superhero movies that existed. But what happened with the advent of Iron Man, that was the first time that Marvel Studios actually created a movie themselves. And what made it, I think, distinct was that they had a plan from the beginning, like a plan, okay? They started off with Iron Man. At the end of the credits, you have this scene that sets up the next movie, and then you're on a roll. Then you got Captain America in play. Then you got Thor. Then you bring them together for the Avengers, and they have this all mapped out. And I think you could sense from the start that you're on a journey, and if you stick with this, it's going to go someplace special.
So it's funny because, like you say, they had it. They mapped it out.
Yeah.
But like, it really got mapped out years ago, like when I was reading comics, right? So like when they had characters that would cross over into other comic books, like that is super, that's something that like comics have mastered. Because it's like basically cross promotional, so you're like, oh, Wolverine's going to be in going to be in a comic book with the Punisher.
See, this is something I don't know because I don't read comic books. So this is a pre-existing thing of crossovers.
Yeah, because then so let's say you're like a huge fan of, and I'm not a comic book guy. I was for like a year when I was in middle school, which I think that's appropriate.
Oh, sorry, Dan.
Sorry. It's okay. It's all right. Like I understand comic books. Like it's sophisticated. I'm gonna say something really stupid right now. That's okay, listeners. Just forgive me. But what I would say is there are crossover characters, and that makes it really interesting. So that you're not always reading. I mean, how many times can you read your character faces a certain scenario? But when you have a crossover character, it's a lot of fun. And then sometimes they even fight each other.
Right.
So Yeah, so you have characters that might be two characters, and then if two good characters fighting each other, you're like, what is going on? And then they team up. Mm. And all that stuff is really, within the Marvel Universe, was that it was happening constantly when I was reading comic books.
So there you go. The blueprint was there.
Yeah, they had it already.
There you go.
But, I mean, I guess the hard part is, like, keeping consistency with those actors and with the timelines and all that. Like, that production schedule has got to be just insane.
And finding the right directors and actors, right? I mean, Jon Favreau knocked it out of the park with the first Iron Man. Robert Downey Jr., who was coming, was on his comeback tour, right? Like, basically right. coming back from Hollywood oblivion. And he makes this movie, and he was so perfect as Tony Stark. And that really launched it. Because, I mean, I think you'll see the DC is the perfect example. They've got a plan too, but they keep failing every single time because you have to have the right director and you have to have the right stars, and they got it right from the beginning, Marvel. And so you basically had Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, then they all teamed up for the Avengers, and then there was a Hulk in there with Edward Norton, but we don't talk about that because that was a terrible movie.
It was a bad movie?
No one, yeah. They disowned it. It's fine. Mark Ruffalo became the Hulk in the Avengers. They kind of just forgot about that whole thing. So it's all good. That was the first phase. And then round two was...
So they had some junk that they had to offer.
There was one. Plus, they made one bad movie.
Norton's a high-priced actor to have in a CGI movie.
You're right. Totally. Yeah.
He's not meant for it.
They were probably like good riddance. Round two, Iron Man 3, Thor 2, Captain America 2, and then comes Guardians of the Galaxy. So basically, when the first Guardians came out, we were used to the tropes, kind of. It was almost starting to be like, well, is there something more here? Because we had three Iron Mans, two Thors, and two Captain Americas, and an Avengers movie. And then mm-hmm. Guardians of the Galaxy. And I think that it came along at the right time when we were looking for something fresh. And that is what the first movie provided for me anyway.
So I've seen a few of these movies.
Yes.
And with the exception of the character of Tony Stark or whatever, I don't think that those other movies are like this movie at all.
They're not. Yeah, that's right. Which ones have you seen? I'm curious. Like, can you even remember?
Invited late at night with some really excited guy. He's like, you like movies? And he's like, I got surround sound.
It's not me.
And then I'm like, all right. And we go down and we watch something that's just like,
you go down to
where
his
all the guys are like, that's so badass. And yeah, we go down, right, exactly. And it's fun. Uh-huh. But I don't like I don't have that in the same, it's not in the same category to me as like going to the theater and like watching a film. Mm-hmm. So I've seen a bunch of them. Captain America in particular is obnoxious to me.
Yeah, it's the weakest of the big three, I would say. But yeah, Captain America 2 is actually really good.
I think visually it's fairly stunning. And like I love the costume design and all that stuff.
And he's a really pure character. I like him, yeah. Chris Evenson.
And then I've seen some of the Iron Man movies, but mostly forced by my son to watch edited versions of the Iron Man movies on TV in the afternoon.
So you're perfect. So you didn't love those earlier iterations, and then comes Guardians of the Galaxy. So what did you think of the first film? How did it strike you?
So I've only seen the first film one time, and it was when it came out. Mm-hmm. And so it struck me that the characters were more accessible, and they're more like real people, and they weren't like they didn't seem to like have a witty comeback or like this fake dialogue. The dialogue seemed funny and fresh. And they each had kind of character flaws, and it wasn't just like they were a young punk learning about, you know, it wasn't the character flaws are very, very real. And so I liked it.
Yes.
And yeah, they just seemed more human, even though they were less human, actually.
Right. Right. Yeah. I agree. I'll tell you where it really struck me that this was something different was it was towards the beginning of the volume one when you had this ship land on this generic planet, and this guy gets out of the ship and he has his mask on and he walks into a cave, and you're just kind of like, ugh. And then he takes off his mask. It's Chris Pratt, right? And he takes a Walkman out, puts it on, and he starts dancing around this cave to Come and Get Your Love. And you're like, okay, this is different.
Yeah.
This is something I haven't seen before. And then Guardians of the Galaxy smashes across the screen, the title card, you know, and it's like, I'm in for a treat. And from then on, I really feel like it was fresh. It was I mean, there is, you know, Chris Pratt's spewing one-liners, but there is something that felt more sincere about it. It didn't feel artificial. It felt like it was just a really good script. It really was. Well-directed, well-paced. It's actually probably my favorite Marvel movie of to date. I mean, it's up there at least.
It's so far away from those other movies. I don't even, like, think of them similar.
Hmm.
Like, because the writing is so much better.
Yep.
The characters are good. And then it does it. It's, they've done something with those films, like, with especially the soundtracks.
Yeah. Killer soundtracks. Both of them. Volume 2 as well.
And the idea of, like, that it has a melancholy soundtrack in a futuristic setting.
I like that.
And there's something to that. And then the other thing I like about it is they're highly emotional. Where, like, usually superheroes are, at least the ones I've seen, are either their only emotions are rage, or they are emotionless and emotion is weak, and it's like basically the antithesis of, like, what a superhero should be. These ones are, like, very much encouraging emotion as being like, this is good actually for a hero to have emotion
from the start. Think of the opening scene to Volume 1. His mother dies of cancer, and you're in tears from, like, the first 30 seconds. Like, it's insane.
So it's like don't deny the emotional reality. Like, this exists for everyone, including superheroes. So I think it's very liberating within that genre. That's like, that has taken only, like, one emotion of anger or rage and has kind of canonized that as this is what superheroes do. They get pissed.
Yeah.
And then they, like, go kill everyone or get revenge. Like, this is not that way at all.
And I love the diversity of the characters coming together and having to form this team. You've got Peter Quill, who's, of course, Chris Pratt, and then this sassy raccoon named Rocket, right? And this fierce green warrior woman, Gamora, a talking tree called Groot, who only says three words, I am Groot. And then this huge wrestler dude who's, like, really hyper-literal and always says exactly what he's thinking. And you throw that together, and it's just perfect. Like, seeing them play off each other, it works so well.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I like that. We're still talking about the first one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so I don't know. It was refreshing to me. I didn't expect it to be good, and so when it was, I was like, "Hey, I could watch this." And even when you said, "I'm going to have you watch a superhero movie, Guardians of the Galaxy," I was like, "Okay."
I was surprised. Yeah, I thought I would have to twist your arm. Exactly.
Yeah. So they've done something right there. A lot of it is writing.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it probably.
And the way they just kind of turn the genre on its head, right? Like in Volume 1, you get to the big climactic scene at the end where the villain is, like, you know, about to unleash his final doom on everything. And then Chris Pratt's over there dancing and he's like, "Dance off, bro." Right? And that's how he beats the enemy, is having a dance off. And it's like, I've never seen that before.
They mock the seriousness of the other movies.
Exactly. Right.
So in some ways they break the genre. And that's good. Because the other ones are so serious, it's like at some point you can only handle that for so long, and you've got to have something breakthrough. And I think they've actually made the CGI and, like, the effects and all that stuff is actually secondary, which a lot of critics would disagree with that opinion on my part. But I would say even, like, the first scene of we can get into this other one whenever you want to. That's up to you.
Go for it. I want you to do it right
now. Even the first scene of this one is Baby Groot, who's this little tiny wooden guy. I forgot how he became Baby Groot when he was regular Groot.
This big ship was crash landing, and they were all going to die, and so Groot wrapped them all up inside of himself, and then he broke into pieces, but he somehow regenerated into Baby
Groot.
But
he's a baby now.
Yes,
he's very cute.
Yeah.
He's CGI. But the idea is, like, this first battle scene is, like, Baby Groot is this little tiny toddler tree guy. And he plugs in the music because that was really important to have the music. If you're going to be in this battle against, they're fighting this, like, weird octopusy, I don't know what it is. It's some creature, space creature.
Right.
And it's funny because it becomes secondary to the little guy dancing and, like, hanging out. And
you see this battle completely from his perspective.
Yeah. And it's all from the back. It's all in the background. And it's the stuff that normally, like, in a superhero movie would be like, this really matters.
Yeah.
What really matters in this one is in the foreground, which is the character. And he's CGI, which is funny, but you feel close to him. You're like, oh, I feel an affinity for this little guy. But so that the character is first and his personhood is first. And then the shoot 'em up blow, you know, explosion CGI crap is secondary in that movie. Mm-hmm. They're even trying to take the wrestling character is even trying to take care of him during the battle. See, so relationships are like primary instead of like that. They're not defined against that protagonist. They're defined on their own, which I think is kind of cool. I mean, antagonist. They're defined on their own, which I kind of like. So most of the superheroes are like, well, what can they fight that determines how good they are? And not this group.
Right.
Like they are who they are.
So I'm going to disagree with you a little bit.
All right, go ahead.
Here we go. The first scene, I'm glad you started there, because I feel like I talked about the first scene, it wasn't the first scene, but it was close to the first scene in the volume one where Peter dancing around the cave. I feel like the first scene of volume two with Baby Groot dancing around in this battle scene is indicative of why I had problems with volume two.
Oh, good.
Because I feel like they have all of the same elements of volume one. Everything we loved about volume one is present in volume two, but it works about half as well. And so you've got this opening scene, which is very similar to Chris Pratt dancing around in the cave, this kind of goofy subverting expectations thing, but Baby Groot. It was cute, but for some reason it felt too cute. It felt forced.
Cutesy.
Yes, yeah, cutesy. Yeah. Exactly. Whereas Chris Pratt dancing in the cave felt fresh and fun and sincere. And that's where I ran into problems with volume two is
You'd never seen this. So here I'm going to push back.
Please.
You would never see anything like that the first time you saw that. And the only thing that you have to compare Baby Groot to is the first one, right? Like, can you name any other movie that's this way?
So can you do this with a sequel? Can you really say, well, if the first one didn't exist, you would like it? I mean, can you, a sequel is a sequel for a reason, right? Isn't it intricately tied to the first movie?
Yeah. Yeah, I think anytime you repeat something, I'd be careful because I'm probably repeating myself. But anytime you're trying to like play the same trick on people twice, mm-hmm. they're going to know.
Right.
And there's no way to like, and then what we want to say is, oh, that's a bad trick. And the reality is, no, you just can't do the same trick twice.
But it's still on the filmmaker knowing that you are doing the trick twice and you have to top it.
Because $773 million, the studio says you're going to do this trick again.
Yeah, but James Gunn decided to write and direct again. So he needs to come up with something that is either different or better than the elements of the first. He can't do the same thing because it's going to have the law of diminishing returns. That's my point.
So you need it's like Godfather 2,
mm-hmm.
the ultimate sequel.
There you go. Godfather 2.
So that's the ultimate sequel. So, but like they basically create a whole backstory in Italy, in Sicily. Sorry for all my people that know the difference. So they had to create this backstory and they had to, in order to do that, they're not new characters, but there's a different time period. They have to back way the heck up and they create basically another film.
Empire Strikes Back. Same thing. You're taking some of the elements, but you're going in a completely different direction. Darker, more meaty storyline. Jaws 2, the reverse example. I feel like they...
But Empire is a different director than
that's
Star
true.
Wars.
That's true.
So it's like a totally different director.
That's true. And maybe that helps.
Like Harry Potter films.
Right.
I don't want to get into that. I can't watch this.
Although Francis Ford Coppola did all three Godfathers and the third one was terrible, but the second one is legitimately a great sequel.
It's great. Won Academy. Yeah. It won Best Picture, didn't it?
Oh, I believe so.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So I guess like it's hard to do the same trick twice.
Yes.
I think most of the reviews that I've read about have said what you said, and they would say he does a pretty good job at doing the same trick twice.
Pretty good job. I'll give you that. I didn't hate it. I thought it was an enjoyable experience. I can't help but be critical because, and it probably is, you're right, because I love the first one. I do. I love it. And this just didn't work as well for me. Now, a few other criticisms I had. Okay. The plot. I feel like the plot of the first one was legitimately, it's like every superhero movie. It's kind of ridiculous. This guy wants to find Infinity Stone so he can, control the galaxy. Okay. All right. Objectively, it's silly compared to, something else. But at the same time, you got it. You were with it. You were tracking this plot.
Without a brain, you could get that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And there might be some minor spoilers. Some people have said we sometimes spoil the movie too much without a sufficient warning. So we may.
How long has this movie been out?
The Guardians of the Galaxy. Everyone should have seen it by now. It's made like a bazillion dollars.
Do people listen to our review and then go, well, I was going to see that.
Right. No.
I don't know if they do that or not. I don't know if our influence is like that yet.
Well, anyway, here's your spoiler alert. I'm going to talk about a few minor plot details. But anyway, so this whole idea of Peter's father being this god with his planet ego.
Kurt Russell.
Which is an incredibly obvious metaphor, by the way. Yes, Kurt Russell, yes. But the fact that he's this conceited guy and he has a planet called Ego, I mean, really? It's just...
It's like allegory.
Come on. And it's an insult to allegory. and then he wants to, like, reshape the galaxy, and it's just nonsense to me. It's utter nonsense. And it turns into this really empty spectacle, I feel like, where Kurt Russell's face is superimposed on this rock, and he's trying to, like, eat everybody. It just becomes just ridiculous, in my opinion. I didn't work for me at all. In fact, I thought the animation, that the CGI was kind of subpar in this movie. Like, I actually noticed at times, like, that looks kind of fake. Baby Groot, I don't think it's 100% convincing.
Yeah.
The Kurt Russell rock face wasn't jiving for me. I don't know.
You're more critical on the visual elements than I am.
But, I mean, Marvel is known for pretty much, like, picture-perfect quality graphics. I mean, you're hard-pressed to find something that looks fake in a Captain America or a Thor. This was the first Marvel movie I can remember. I was like, that doesn't work. I don't know.
So I haven't heard that yet. Okay. And I've read a bunch of reviews, and I haven't heard people say like that this is an inferior quality from a technical standpoint. I've heard them say it's really good, but a lot of it's canned.
Mm.
So not saying that the quality is bad, but that it's been done over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. So that it like, okay, there's a big battle. All right, yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Things are blowing up. We escaped the explosion just barely.
Right.
How many times can we just barely escape the explosion and still have tension in the scene, right? But yeah, so I don't know about that.
Here's another thing I didn't like. I didn't like how, in kind of a standard genre staple is having the opening scene be this random battle that we kind of enter the middle of and we don't really know all the details about it. And there's just like, oh, our heroes are fighting some random battle.
And who are the heroes? We don't know that.
Right. Yeah. Well, they took that, and what should have happened is that should have been an isolated thing, and then you move on to the beginning of a narrative that we can kind of gradually unfold. But the fact that they took this beginning, and actually that became a central plot point, and we were kind of thrust into the middle of this new planet and these new people, and that was a mistake, I felt, is spreading that into the whole movie instead of just having it be this fun, isolated hero moment. You know, didn't like that. And finally, I will keep going. I didn't like the fact that I feel like some of the characters that they established, these are established characters from Volume 1, they made them do things that didn't fit with the establishment of the characters. So Gamora's sister, what is Gamora's sister's name?
She's blue.
She's blue.
Yeah.
This idea of Gamora reaching, of hugging her, and she like kind of goes in for this partial hug. No, she would never do that.
They're breaking character.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And no, she would never try to save Gamora's life, ever.
So usually I disagree with you on all kinds of stuff, right? I do not disagree with this at all.
Thank you.
I think that there was a lot of character breaking, and I think there were some really, really heavy-handed points they were trying to make.
Yep.
So you're like, so if I brought my 8-year-old, they would get it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this movie's about family, you know? He's like, yes, because it was told to me 500 times this movie's about family in small doses, right?
Uh-huh.
And, you know...
This father guy's kind of full of himself. It's like,
right.
Yeah.
And I think the other... Man, that... What's the guy that... I want to call him Raccoon. He's not a raccoon, but he looks like
Rocket.
One. Rocket.
Yeah.
Like, wow, Rocket's, like, got some damage, man.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's, like, emphasized. But, you know, it's okay because in the family, other people have damage, too. I mean, it's just kind of some of that stuff didn't need to be overt, and we would get it. And so it was a little insulting if you're, like, if you're kind of a more critical film watcher, which I wouldn't call myself that. I don't want to be, like, pompous.
Really?
Some things I am. Some things I totally go right over my head. But like with this, I'm like, man, just next time you should issue a hammer and a spike and then just let like theater employees like hammer a spike into your skull
yes.
with the word family on it. You know, it's like 4D or something. In any case, like, yeah. So I thought it was heavy-handed.
Yeah. Yeah, what about Yondu and Peter having, like, a father-son moment? Bullcrap. Yondu, no way. Does he have this soft heart? He's a mercenary. They established that at the beginning. He's a heartless mercenary. And it cheapens him to actually go backwards.
Well, I don't know if it cheapens him. If they could show the steps that where he got from here to there,
that's a good point. Yeah.
It wouldn't be cheap. But they didn't show the steps.
It's like flicking on a light switch.
You need 4 hours to show those steps. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it did. It turned into flicking a light switch. And they're trying to contrast him with the Kurt Russell character.
Right. Yeah. Which, again,
it's just, you know, we can't have it be like an emotional coming of age story and also be this flick at the same time. I think that's like a high expectation for it. And who knows what, like, what's on the cutting room floor? I have no idea. Like, those characters might be really well developed, but then the studio's like, yeah, we're not going to risk that. And so we're going to do what we can here to make minimal plot. We're going to tweak it until like we have just the minimum of what we need for this character to develop. Yeah. I like the points that are made with the ego character. I like that, those ideas. I don't know if like that's the most effective vehicle for those ideas. Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by which ideas are you referring to?
So I think the film did a really good, they did a good job of like presenting an antihero and an idea of, and this narrative that was a competing narrative to Star-Lord, his character. Mm-hmm. And Ego is like this competing narrative, which is like, for him, expansion is meaning to a certain degree. And for him, like, he's willing to sacrifice his own children and he's willing to betray relationships. And he's basically, he's like the gigolo of the universe.
I love it.
I mean, he is.
Yeah.
He's like sleeping with everyone. Uh-huh. Every planet.
Spreading his seed, literally, metaphorically.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So dude's like out there basically having false intimacy with all of these creatures, including human beings, in order to expand his territory. And so the idea is that he uses these relationships in order to expand, and that on his actual own, he is a planet, and that nobody is on that planet except, and he can't sleep, like he has no peace. Mm-hmm. So the idea of that's the ego, and that's his father, and that he can choose to either live in, like be with, you know, he can choose to basically be sacrificed by his own father for his father's expansion, or he can choose to be a regular human being and be mortal. Which I think that gives us like that takes us way back into Greek mythology stuff, right?
I like that when you say it. I just wish they would have executed
it. It's right
it.
There. Right. I mean, that's part of the hammer and the
yeah.
It's there. I think it's hard because there's so much flash that it's hard to get the message. So the idea of the Pratt's character is like rejecting those ideas, and instead he'd rather have like a mercenary that would be willing to give his life for him. So like those are contrasted. Mm. And I like that. I thought that was kind of cool. I know the director isn't religious, but he went to Catholic school and all stuff, so he's got these ideas in his head, even if he doesn't know he does. Or even if he knows them and rejects them, they're still in his head when he's writing.
That's right. Gotcha.
Yeah, he can't get away from stuff. But I think those ideas are like kind of powerful. Like, what is our... This is the theology to me of this movie, which is, are we willing to damage everyone around us in order to expand ourselves for our own name, to create our world?
Yeah.
Or instead, are we willing to become a human and interact? Like, the biggest thing was like, you didn't come to the planet just to be with us. You came to expand your own universe onto our planet, which is inherently destructive. Like, the blobs are destructive in the movie. Mm. And which is the opposite of like the crew, like the family itself is like, they really exist to be with each other.
Yeah.
Which is funny. Like, why are they together? They like to be with each other. Like, that's it, right? Mm-hmm. And then the thing that was the hardest thing was when they separated and the family, well, we're going to split up for a little while. And the threat to that structure is actually the dad, which is his ego, right? That threatens that structure. So it's like this big allegorical, metaphorical thing that's operating as a like a super plot above it, right?
Well, I've been reading a lot of Richard Rohr lately. Uh-oh. And and he talks about this all the time in the battle against your ego. Like, your ego is always threatening, and it's always the opposite of this idea of community, of grace, of the way that Christ has invited us into. And so, yeah, definitely. I think there's rich theology there. Just
and it has psych roots too, like Freud. It's like ego, id, ego, superego, and the idea that the ego is, has to regulate reality to us.
Yeah.
So, like, if reality ain't matching with, like, our, you know, how we want things to be. Uh-huh. Anyway, I don't know Freud. I've read Freud, but I'm not, like, I don't feel confident in describing that whole theory right now. But in any case, like, it is drawing on some of those ideas too, which is that we are self-deceptive, and that sometimes we would prefer expanding ourselves to the death of other people.
Yep.
And I think we see that constantly.
So what are some other things you liked about the movie? We were kind of hitting on it a little bit there. What are some things you liked?
I thought it was a good movie. So one of the
Tell me.
So I was listening on NPR, and they're talking about doing good book reviews. And one of the things they said is that half the time people don't say if they liked it or not. So I just want to say I like this movie. I would see it. I think it's totally worth putting $10 at your local theater. Go see it. It's a great movie. I think you could see it standalone too. I don't think you need to have seen the first one. I think you can show up to this movie and you will still have fun.
Maybe you'd like it better.
You might actually like it better.
Right.
You might like it better. I guess you've probably seen the first one multiple times.
Multiple times.
So maybe if you've seen it like me once, maybe you'd like this one better. Maybe I'll go back to the first one and be like, oh, this is so much better.
It is.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
So that's possible. But I would say it's a good movie. It's a fun movie. It's sophisticated dialogue. The characters are fun. I thought the CGI, I mean, I'm not a critic of CGI. I thought it was like just standard CGI. It's what I expected. Mm-hmm. And...
There are still funny lines. I like all the pop culture references, right? Like Chris Pratt, you know, he's always pulling these earthly references that no one else understands. He's like talking about Cheers, and Gamora's like, I have no idea what Cheers is.
It reminded me of Evil Dead.
Oh, yeah.
Like the dialogue is, I forgot who the Evil Dead guy is.
It's Sam Raimi.
Yeah, right? Sam Raimi.
Yeah.
It reminded me of like, but that's in like the other direction, right? Because like those movies, like they go into the past or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it reminded me of like those Sam Raimi movies where you have what's his name, the character guy.
Yeah, what's that guy?
I forgot his name. Bruce or whatever.
Bruce
something. I don't remember his name.
It's terrible.
Anyway, we should know this stuff because they're good movies. They're good movies.
Yeah.
But he's always doing these like pop culture references from like the 80s and 90s, and it's like in the like medieval Europe or whatever, or like, you know, whatever. I don't remember what it is. But he's doing that constantly.
Bruce Campbell. Thank you.
That's a character, right?
I did not look that up. Finally came to me.
Hey, there it is. And I liked that. I thought that was fun. It's just fun. In the same way, like, you can't be, like, fighting evil constantly and not have a little bit of fun.
Yes.
So those are good references. David Hasselhoff.
Mary Poppins. I'm Mary Poppins, y'all.
You see?
Yeah,
I do. Like wrecking the movie since line by line for you folks. No, that's good. So I thought it was good. I'm with several critics I have read, and this is why Metacritic's such a good site, because you can like read so many different critics. Although, be careful.
Rotten Tomatoes is better than Metacritic.
All right,
come on.
It's fine. I'm just telling you.
I use Metacritic for like books and music reviews and things like that.
You don't like it for movies?
I do not. Rotten Tomatoes is the perfect vehicle for movie research. I think Metacritic is a clumsy site overall, but it's the only game in town for all other pop culture things.
Okay, good. I just go there sometimes. I hit both, but I didn't know. I didn't. You're more into this than I am. But in any case, yeah, I just read a bunch of reviews. And yeah, and the thing is, they say the movie lags in the third act. Mm-hmm. And so for like, it's really, the pacing is pretty decent, but what do you remember? The third act of everything. Yeah. I mean, that's what people remember every time. So I found myself like laughing out loud in the first two thirds of that movie. And then the final third, I found myself yawning. I mean, that's like, this is something that they made a change because they're trying to wrap it up, or they had to fit it in, or I don't know what they were trying to do, but when I get to the point where they have to put the bomb inside of the thing to blow the thing
up,
that's when I was like, click, all right, my brain's off.
It did turn into a mess, and I feel like the ending itself was anticlimactic, and I totally agree that the third act is a letdown.
Yeah.
100% agree.
So I thought it had a sloppy ending.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree with that. But not bad enough where I couldn't recommend it. I'd recommend it. I think this is like a really, I think it's a good movie. I think it's a B plus A minus movie. You're having a hard time with that.
B minus.
But within the superhero genre, like, would I rather see this?
Yeah.
Or like whatever the next Thor installment is? Of
Thor
course
Ragnar
this.
Coming out in November.
Really? You'd rather see the Thor movie?
Absolutely. I feel like compared to the quality of those films, this is middle
what
to
is that?
Lowbrow Marvel.
What does that mean? The quality?
I'm telling you that Marvel has been on like a perfect track record. The first Captain America was just okay. It was probably around this kind of a level. But once you get past that, I mean, you're talking about consistently B+, A- movies. And
Is Thor as a character worth watching, or is he more of an idea?
Thor is a great character, and they are great movies. Kenneth Branagh made the first Thor, so don't hate.
I'm not hating. I'm just asking. Like, for me, like, this is a rich movie full of, like, we say pop culture allusions.
Yeah.
But I see Thor as a dude that's, like, pretty one-dimensional that was probably, probably invented by a teenager.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, he's probably more one-dimensional, but it's still a fun character, and they're really well-made movies, honestly.
Okay. So,
I
would watch the third installment of this
me
series.
Too. I'm looking forward to the third installment, yes. Mm-hmm. But I would be more B- and you'd be more B+. That's okay.
Yeah.
It's all right. It's good.
And I would put it, I'm respecting the genre, John, which I think is what you wanted me to do,
yes,
right?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
That's my dream.
So I'm respecting the genre enough to give it a B+. For me, that's a big deal. Like, most superhero mirrors, I'm like C-. Really?
Oof.
Including like the Iron Man movies?
No way.
Not Iron Man. Captain America movies, C- to me.
All the way across the board.
Yeah, absolutely. Crap.
That hurts me.
Absolute crap. And it doesn't, I don't care how much, you could pour all kinds of money into the CGI, and it doesn't mean anything to me.
You really need to watch Captain America 2. That is a great movie.
I think I've seen Captain America 2.
The one with, what's his stupid friend's name? I forget. Anyway, doesn't matter. Whatever.
Yeah, I think I've seen it. Yeah. Miserable.
Yeah. It's a really good movie.
Let's just watch video games.
What did you think of Sylvester Stallone in this?
I don't know. He's in it.
Sylvester Stallone. I was just disappointed because I felt like I'm fairly certain this is the movie he has made after winning an Oscar for Creed. And I'm like, whoa, dude. You've come down several notches.
Is there anyone in Hollywood that's writing lines thinking of Sylvester Stallone?
Oh yeah, exactly. And I just,
like, who can slur these lines?
But that's the problem, is there were times where it literally felt like it was either the first take or he was reading a prompter like across the room.
Don't get me wrong, this guy's Sylvester Stallone is a brilliant guy.
That's what I'm saying. And I thought he was perfect in Creed. He deserved every bit of that Oscar, so that's what's so disappointing.
He is still Rocky.
Well,
that is his character. That's who he's Rambo. He's Rocky, John Rambo. I mean, and he's not
whoever this is. Who is? I don't even remember his name.
Maybe he'll play a bigger role, and it would make sense that he would play a bigger role later on. Anyway, yeah, I don't know. He's past his prime as far as acting. I mean, the guy's he's gonna be 70 years old now.
God, he must be.
And he's still trying to play action roles. That's like really difficult. I mean, the guy's a fantastic writer. He's a good director.
He is,
and he's a good actor. He's not gonna have range just because of his demeanor. He does slur words.
Mm-hmm.
I think he has a speech impediment, and so he's only gonna be able to play characters that are that have similarities in there. So I think it's hard for him to play other characters.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally it does. Yeah.
So, like, I think we all have range. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why you have so many character actors out there, and they're not going to be leads ever. And so you have to work with your range that you have. And he plays a great boxer. He plays a great boxing coach. He plays a great restaurant owner.
From Philadelphia.
Yeah, but he's not going to play...
Who likes Marion?
He's not going to play, like, a Matt Damon
Adrian.
Role.
Sorry. Adrian. Said Marion. Doggone it.
Adrian. Yeah. So,
Eye of the Tiger.
Carl Weathers is the one we need to worry about.
Oh, when the bloody towel falls. Can we get some love for Rocky IV around here, a.k.a. the best movie ever made?
No. No, actually, I love Rocky IV.
Happy birthday, Polly.
That's versus the Russian, right?
Yeah, the Russian.
That's great.
If he dies, he dies. I love that movie.
How are we here? How did we get here?
Sorry, it was my fault. I want to talk about something. Okay, sorry. As the final piece of this, something struck me, and I want to talk about it with you. Do you remember the scene where Yondu kills all those guys with his arrow thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, so there's like...
You mean it's right out of Kill Bill?
Well, I didn't think about that. That's good. But there's like 100 guys, literally, like this arrow's going through all of them, and we see him walking in slow motion, and there's this really cool music playing behind him, literally as bodies are falling in slow motion, right? And it's at that point, sometimes, like, I step outside at a point like that, and I ask myself, is this glorifying violence? And this is something, I know I've talked to some people who actually stopped seeing Marvel movies, and they're cool people, they're not conservatives, but they're like, just like, I can't get on board with this whole, you know, the solution to everything is to kill my enemies, and I feel like Marvel glorifies that to the extreme, and I think it's a fair criticism, and I mean, this is something that goes back in Hollywood all the way to Die Hard, Indiana Jones. I mean, you know, this is just, the Hollywood sets up a narrative very consistently that there's good guys, there's bad guys, and the good guys kill the bad guys, and there's peace on earth, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the narrative. So as a Christian who takes, you know, Jesus' command to love your enemies seriously, who believes in nonviolence, it is sometimes troubling for me. And I'll admit, half the time I don't think about it, but then there's moments like this scene where I just snap out of it, and I'm like, wait a second, this is not what makes a hero, right? What do you feel about that?
So I thought the scene was totally Tarantino-esque.
Mm.
And I'm not alone in that. Like, I thought that, and I started reading some reviews, and that's what other people mentioned Tarantino, too.
Well, of all the characters, Yondu would be the most Tarantino-esque. Absolutely.
Well, they took, like, they're basically henchmen that are dying. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and so these henchmen die, and they had to make a quick scene to set up why that scene could exist. And, yeah, and so...
But what do we do? What do we do with this whole myth of redemptive violence that pops up again and again and again in Hollywood movies? Do we just accept it? We go with it? It doesn't trouble you at all.
Yeah, I don't think it built. So the question for me was, is that he didn't have to kill all those guys.
Exactly.
It was totally unnecessary. But it also like makes his character more complex that he did kill all those guys.
But is it frowned upon from the film's perspective, or is he lifted up as cool?
No, because they're henchmen. So the idea is like if you don't know anybody, if you don't know that character well enough, who have betrayed
yeah.
the Guardians, basically.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know the character well enough, then you don't have to feel for them. So it's like if you're isolated from these characters, then who cares if they live or die? They just
well, right, but that,
fodder.
But see, that is the whole, you know, thing. It's like most people don't see a problem with it because they've bought into that idea of like, well, if it's a bad guy who's done bad things, then obviously you kill him. That's what you do. And this is again comes up in all the other superhero movies, maybe even more dramatically, like Iron Man and Superman and Spider-Man. At the end of the day, they're gonna kill the bad guy.
It's revenge narratives,
right? Exactly. Like you were talking about first,
right? So a lot of them are revenge narratives, and this has that element to it.
I did a podcast once back in the day when I was first starting out and doing solo ones where I argued at the time that maybe there was some redemptive value in this because in scripture, it's pretty obvious that God kills people, or at least I thought at the time. And so maybe the superheroes who have superpowers and super insight into being able to differentiate good from bad are actually reflecting a godlike stance. In there and unlike regular humans who always are blindsided and can't see the big picture, they can, and therefore maybe they're justified. I don't believe that anymore because I'm starting to have trouble with the whole idea of God killing people. Been reading a lot of Boyd and Crucifixion of the Warrior God, man. It's a great book. So I can't abide by that theory anymore. But that's a theory I had once, but it doesn't work for me anymore. Now I'm just troubled.
Yeah, so I think how uncomfortable are we as, especially our culture is like obsessed with revenge
yep.
and killing. and where we have no problem having our kids watch killing on TV, but if like, uh-oh, there's a breast on TV.
Yeah.
Oh no, the source of life.
Or two F words and it's like rated R.
Right. But now, I'm not like, I'm not into like having my kids watch nudity or like movies that have, yeah, you're looking at MPAA stuff, but I'm not, don't want to even get into that. But the idea of like, what do we find morally reprehensible? Yeah. And even some very moral people have no problem with like headshots in movies of, and sometimes of characters we don't know, very cheap deaths. Mm-hmm. And like that's a problem.
Yeah.
That's a problem. And it reflects our culture more than anything else. Does not reflect the gospel. I don't see that.
Does not. Mm-mm. No.
So I guess I agree with you, that we should not accept this like wholesale, they basically mass murder.
Yes.
And then have it glorified in the scene as it is like what we talked about when we reviewed, what was the movie that we, the Tarantino movie that we reviewed?
Oh yeah. With the intermission.
Yeah.
I totally forgot.
The Hateful Eight.
Yeah. Thank you.
So in the Hateful Eight, we talked about stylized violence.
Yep.
And that's what this was.
Yeah.
It was hyper violence, stylized, and it didn't need to exist in the film. And I think maybe it was there because it was, that act was dragging.
Hmm. Well, it did liven it up.
You're,
I'll
like,
give it that.
What just happened?
Yeah. Yeah. All right, man. This is it. Final thoughts. Your chance to comment. Get your final comments on. Go.
Good movie. I wouldn't take kids. I don't know how. I might take a kid to it. I don't want to get too much into the parental.
Yeah. It's all right.
I don't know. I thought it was good. My father-in-law liked it. This would be a good movie to see with your father-in-law.
Father's Day is coming up.
It's coming up. Yeah, this is fun. But yeah, I don't have an opinion in comparing it to the first one like you do. I think it's a good movie. Pay attention to all the stuff that's, the subtexts, because I think there are a lot of they're really interesting ones because they're anti-hero subtexts. And so as you're watching the movie, think about how the Chris Pack character is denying the hero, this hero idea of like this constant expansion idea, which I think is kind of cool. Anyway, so yeah, I like it. Good movie. Go watch it.
Blah, B plus, blah, blah, blah. Or A minus, you gotta land.
B plus.
All right, B plus. I'm going with a B minus. Not a bad movie. I agree with Tim. Worth watching. Take your father-in-law. Yeah, not a particularly great movie. I do think it's middle to low tier Marvel as far as Marvel quality is concerned.
Sorry.
I don't think it's comparable to the heights of Iron Man, Captain America, Avengers, but
nobody threw a shield in this one.
Stop it. It's just terrible. So yeah, you got many of the elements of the same movie, but it's a lesser effect. I still love the characters though. I agree with Tim. I'm hoping for volume 3. I will totally be there. I hope we rebound and get to something that's more akin to the first movie. Yeah, it's an okay kickoff to the summer. I'll admit I'm a little disappointed. I was expecting this to be the big grand kickoff, but it's okay. It's a good movie. Just keeping it real, folks.
Sorry. Dude, I think we should watch, I told you this.
What?
Dunkirk.
Oh, totally. We're watching Dunkirk. Don't worry. Spoiler alert, July, you're getting a Dunkirk podcast. That's been
I'm
on the calendar
for really
forever.
Excited because that was one of the previews in that movie when I saw it.
Christopher Nolan? Are you kidding me?
I know.
We've been fanboys of Christopher Nolan for forever.
I know. I'm like getting excited, man. Yeah. I already moved past this movie.
I want to watch Memento again suddenly.
Did you watch, is it Following? Have you seen that movie?
Yeah.
That's a $50,000 movie.
Wow.
Feature length film.
I love it. It was on Netflix for a while there.
Still is.
It's been a long time since I've seen it, but yeah. It's still on Netflix. Oh,
it was last time I looked, yeah.
Okay. Memento, Inception.
We got to get them ready for next time.
No, it's not next time because it doesn't come out till July.
We got to get them ready for July/August, maybe.
Yeah, we've got to watch something in June.
Oh, what are we going to watch?
How about Baby Driver? Have you heard of it?
No.
Kevin Spacey, it's, we'll talk about it. That
right,
may
man.
Be what's coming next. But anyway, Marvel, man. Two more Marvel movies this year, Tim. You'll be interested to know. Spider-Man Homecoming is coming in July. And Thor 3. Or Ragnarok in November.
So when will they be on video so my kids can watch them?
Stop. But then things get really interesting. You'll like this. Next summer, we have the big climax. I mean, this is it. every Marvel movie since Iron Man has been leading up to this point. It's called The Avengers Infinity War. It's two-parters. One comes out next summer. The other one comes out the summer after that. And every single character in all the Marvel movies are in this movie, except the ones that have died. But, like, I'm talking Ant-Man, Guardians of the Galaxy, all of them are in this movie. And so we get to see Guardians of the Galaxy next summer, before even the third one, in this amazing mishmash of it all.
So you're saying somewhere between Star Wars season and Marvel season, or after Marvel season, Star Wars season, there's going to be another, the gigantic, is it a finale or is it a beginning?
It's, well, like I said, it's a two-part extravaganza of everything has led up to this. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I'm excited. How can you not be excited about
that? What a circus film has become.
Circus.
Yeah.
It's probably right.
Make room. Where's Moonlight in all this?
Oh.
No!
Now I feel terrible.
Yes.
I love Moonlight.
Yes. Where is this small independent movie, man?
But Tim, this is what summer is about. It's a break from awards. It's a break from best this and best that. And you just take a tub of popcorn and you get in that air conditioned theater and you just enjoy yourself. Come on. It's okay.
Indulge that adolescent power fantasy.
Yeah. Indulge the ego inside of you.
There it is.
All right, man. That's it. That's our show. Go see Volume 2. It's playing in a theater near you. Tim, always great talking with you. Keep the faith, my friends. We will see you next time.